This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Since Pope Francis became Pope, is that he has tried as much as possible. He appoints cardinals from a wide range of the geographical range of the world, and that has made the universality of the church much more vivid.
That is Father Paul Samasumo, head of Vatican's Radio's Africa Service in English, talking about the election of 21 new cardinals by Pope Francis. Details coming up. Also, a group of Ugandans have gone to court to challenge the country's new anti-homosexuality law. And Nigerian President Bola Tinubu's government has proposed a temporary wage hike for federal workers. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The United Nations has announced it will help mobilize $30 billion a year for water security and sanitation in Africa. The plan's being guided by the UN High-Level Panel on Water Investments. Darren Taylor reports.
At the recent United Nations General Assembly in New York, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres described water as a human right.
Water is humanity's lifeblood, from the food we eat to the ecosystems and biodiversity that enrich our world, to the prosperity that sustains nations, to the economic engines of agriculture, manufacturing, and energy generation, to our health, hygiene, and survival itself.
But a joint UN World Health Organization report released last year says one in three Africans are affected by water scarcity. It says 411 million people in Africa lack clean drinking water and 780 million don't have water sanitation services. In total, about 840 million Africans lack access to basic hygiene. The UN and its partners want to see those numbers greatly reduced by 2030. One of these partners is the Development Bank of Southern Africa, the DBSA. The man in charge of infrastructure delivery at the bank, Chwene Rampele, says the DBSA is in a position to leverage money from international investors to improve water security across the continent.
Most of the budgets of the countries, especially in Africa, we're really so constrained that there's no money at all. But the heads of states have committed to say they will make sure that 5% of their annual budgets will really be dedicated for water projects.
Rampele, however, says this is ambitious, and it's a pledge that many African nations could struggle to live up to. In that case, he says, the UN and its partners could turn to traditional global financing mechanisms such as the World Bank for help. Rampele says the money will be used to build infrastructure capacity across Africa, especially water pipes. He's concerned, though, about changing weather patterns and flooding in particular.
It can really be very catastrophic, and you need to really be coming up to the point that you are looking at pipes that are really resilient to the weather. Like if you go to Japan, you'll find that they've designed pipes that even if there is any earthquake, those particular pipelines don't necessarily then get to be affected because they move with the earthquakes and so on.
Rampele says there needs to be a lot of development in African river basins.
And particularly making sure that when these rains are falling also, we're able to then harvest that particular water, not for it to just all disappear in the sea, and making sure that the way that we build up our dams and infrastructure is more resilient to the climate itself. We're building up systems now to ensure that at least the hydrological data can really be harnessed and we begin to use it to improve the capacity of each and every country to know how you manage this investment.
He says he's confident that $17 billion raised within Africa by organizations such as the DBSA will soon be available to begin constructing new dams, for example. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A group of Ugandans has gone to court to challenge the country's new anti-homosexuality law, which has been described as one of the harshest in the world. They are waiting for the court to set the date for the hearing on their petition to begin. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
The petitioners are challenging the constitutionality of Uganda's four-month-old anti-homosexuality law, which includes harsh penalties, including the possible death penalty for some same-sex activities. Human rights attorney Nicholas Opio leads the legal team for the petitioners.
It violates inherent inalienable fundamental rights of a large section of Ugandans, including the media, including people who are involved in research, people who are involved in other forms of work that work with sexual minorities. So this case is not just about sexual minorities. It's about the rights of professionals, doctors, teachers, lawyers, whose very work is inhibited by the provisions of this law.
Opio says today's court session was a preparatory stage ahead of the hearing of the case, which is expected to start later this month.
And so we appeared before the registrar for conferencing. Unfortunately, the respondent, the Attorney General, was not ready and asked that we allow them some time so we can file joint conferencing notes. So we have agreed to file joint conferencing notes by October 12th. This is the beginning of what's going to be, in our hope, a quick process for the court to hear and determine the petition that we have filed before the court. So the journey starts today.
Opio says his clients are praying for an expedited court hearing to save the Ugandans who, he says, are suffering because of the law.
The people who are being hounded in society, whose very life depends on the outcome of this petition. So we hope the court can treat this matter with the urgency that we see it. We have had to make a difficult choice between a temporary measure and a permanent measure. In our view, permanent measure is the hearing of the petition and disposing it off as quickly as possible. An interim order will only be a stopgap measure, a waste of our time. We have agreed to withdraw the application for a temporary injunction. Instead, fasten the process for the court to hear us and dispose of the case.
He says the rights and well-being of the LGBTQI plus community are in jeopardy and people's lives have been turned upside down.
There have been a few cases that have gone to the courts of law, but there are numerous other violations occurring on a daily basis. People are being evicted by landlords and by their communities. People are being attacked by mobs. People are being discriminated and denied services across this country.
A recent report by Strategic Response Team on Human Rights Violations Against LGBTQI plus Persons in Uganda documented 180 incidents of evictions, displacements and banishments, 176 incidents of torture and cruel and inhuman or degrading treatment, and 156 incidents of discrimination. It also showed 102 incidents of anxiety, panic attacks, suicidal ideation, and depression. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Pope Francis on Saturday further cemented his legacy, elevating 21 prelates to the high rank of cardinal. The new cardinals hail from 15 nations, three of them from Africa, South Africa, South Sudan, and Tanzania. South Sudan now has its first cardinal. It was the Pope's ninth consistory, or gathering of cardinals, since his election in 2013 and continued changes over the past decade, during which the percentage of Asian and African cardinal electors has grown while those from Europe has fallen. For more on the new cardinals, I talked with Father Paul Samasumo, head of the Vatican Radio's Africa service in English.
On Saturday was a special meeting, a ceremony that is known as the consistory. This is when cardinals meet. So cardinals this time were meeting for Pope Francis to make or create, that's the word used, to create new cardinals, the 21 cardinals that he appointed recently. And after that, then they are known as cardinals. They are his closest advisors. Some of them work in the dicastery. Some of them work in their various areas where they live around the world. I think one of the most interesting features
since Pope Francis became Pope is that he has tried as much as possible. He appoints cardinals from a wide range of the geographical range of the world, and that has made the universality of the church much more vivid. Sometimes these cardinals are not very well known, but the fact that he appoints them, they don't come from very big cities or big regions, that the church should be very universal in its outlook. Among those 21 cardinals appointed were also a cardinal from South Sudan, Stephen Ameyo, Archbishop Stephen Ameyo, now Cardinal Stephen Ameyo. And also we have the Archbishop of Cape Town, Stephen Breslin, as well as another Archbishop from Tanzania. This is Rugambwa. Cardinal Rugambwa has been working in the dicasteries of the Vatican for quite some time now, until recently when he was appointed to go to Tanzania.
Talk to us a little about the new South Sudan cardinal.
Even in Africa, the kind of appointment, we have a relatively young bishop of South Sudan from a relatively young nation, South Sudan, independent only in 2011. And unfortunately, after 2011, there was that war, the civil war that occurred, the conflict. They are trying to make a peace. Now the political actors have come together. And we've seen that over the years, Pope Francis, the Church, the Vatican has been encouraging this peace process in South Sudan. The Holy Father also visited South Sudan towards the beginning of this year, if I'm not mistaken. It was all part of encouraging this peace process. So I think the appointment, particularly of the cardinal in South Sudan in Juba, the Archbishop of Juba, Stephen Ameyo, is to encourage this peace process. We saw how he conducted himself when the Holy Father visited South Sudan. That made him much more visible, and they did exceptionally well, given the circumstances that this is a country that has been at war for a very, very long time. There is hardly any infrastructure in South Sudan, but they still did well.
Father, lastly, you know, Pope Francis has selected 21 new cardinals to help reform the Catholic Church, leaning heavily on diversity, like you said, just days ahead of a meeting where he's supposed to outline plans for future to discuss controversial issues such as LGBTQ plus followers, women's roles in the church, and celibacy.
Well, these 21 cardinals actually become part of a larger college of other cardinals who are already there. So what is happening this week for the whole month of October, there will be a meeting that is known as a synod. This synod meeting is usually for bishops, but Pope Francis again has widened it a bit and called different participants from around the world. So it's not only cardinals that are meeting. Almost, I think, close to 400 persons, if I'm not mistaken, will be meeting for the whole month of October. And it's not to reform the church, but what they're trying to do is they are trying to listen to the needs of the church today. What kind of a church do people want? What kind of the church is the Holy Spirit asking for us to become? And he has already, the Pope, Pope Francis, has emphasized that he wants this body, this process, this one-month process, to be a listening process. And apart from those topics you've outlined, there are also everything is on the table for discussion. This process actually began months before. The same process of discussion has been happening in the dioceses, in the country at continental level, and now they are meeting on a world stage. This is the synod meeting that will be happening here in the Vatican for the month of October.
That was Father Paul Samasumo, head of Vatican Radio's Africa Service in English. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The World Health Organization authorized a second malaria vaccine today, a decision that could offer countries a cheaper and more effective option than the world's first shot against the parasitic disease. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said the UN Health Agency approved the new vaccine based on the advice of two expert groups recommending its use in children. Oxford University developed a new three-dose vaccine with the help from the Serum Institute of India. Research suggests it is more than 75% effective and that protection is maintained for at least another year with a booster. Tedros said the shot would cost about $2 to $4 and could be available in some countries next year. In 2021, the WHO endorsed the first malaria vaccine. It was described as a historic effort to end the devastating toll that the mosquito-transmitted disease has on Africa, which sees about 400,000 malaria deaths a year. The new Director General of the International Organization for Migration says one of her priorities is to build more regular pathways for migration for people who have lost hope for a viable future and cannot stay home. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
International Organization for Migration Chief Amy Pope told journalists in Geneva today she has chosen the Horn of Africa as her first mission abroad because more than 80% of migration takes place within the African continent. The first stop on Pope's trip, which begins Sunday, will be Ethiopia. She'll meet with the African Union Commission and government officials and then go on to Kenya, Somalia, and Djibouti. Pope says a focus of her trip is to identify safe pathways and opportunities across the continent and see how the IOM can ensure that migration enables development within countries in Africa.
We've seen increased migration heading south, down to South Africa, and we know that migrants along the route are often facing discrimination, dangers, a lot of violence along the way, and often when they land. So building the awareness, building out better pathways for them.
Pope, the first woman to lead the IOM, says she also will seek solutions for migrants who are going to the Gulf for work. She says the IOM wants to make sure they have access to safe and orderly practices, that they are well treated and not subject to exploitation. She calls the situation in Niger very worrying. She says many African migrants expelled from Algeria are among some 5,000 migrants currently in 8 transit centers in Niger, waiting to go home. Niger recently went through its third coup in less than 2 years.
We're very much advocating to have some humanitarian corridor that's open so that we can allow the migrants who want to go home to be able to go home safely. And we are working with our member states to try to find a pathway forward. Ultimately, we want to make sure that human beings, the people who are on the move, are not the ones who are caught in the crossfire of the current moment.
Pope says hundreds of thousands of people around the world are on the move, not because they want to be, but because they have no alternative. Instead of being a drain on society, the IOM chief says migrants provide many benefits for the communities in which they live. She says communities and governments should work together to find opportunities for people on the move, rather than treating migration as a problem to be solved. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Despite the fact that the U.S. government shutdown was postponed, another week of turmoil seems to be in the making in Congress, where a conservative legislator has promised to be relentless in his efforts to oust Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the latest.
The short-term funding bill that Congress passed Saturday and was signed by President Joe Biden will keep the U.S. government running until at least mid-November. But Biden warned Sunday against a repeat of the chaotic process that preceded the 11th-hour adoption of the stopgap bill.
The brinkmanship has to end, and there should be another. There shouldn't be another crisis. There's no excuse for another crisis. Consequently, I strongly urge my Republican friends in Congress not to wait. Don't waste time as you did all summer. Pass a year-long budget agreement. Honor the deal we made a few months ago.
But a new showdown might be on the horizon on Capitol Hill. Far-right conservatives aren't happy that House Speaker Kevin McCarthy reached out to Democrats to pass the temporary funding bill. Ousting him is now a top priority for conservative Republican Representative Matt Gaetz. Regardless of how that plays out, bipartisan compromises will continue to provide a path forward, said Rachel Snyderman with the Bipartisan Policy Center.
There is bipartisan compromise to support additional funding for Ukraine, to support our troops, and ensure that our border security is well-funded. And so I think that we're going to see, you know, action on those particular priorities in the coming weeks.
Ukraine and the rest of the world will be watching closely, pointed out political scientist Oscar Pocasangre.
I think longer term, we do need to focus more on a structural reform to the institutions and find ways of having more political parties in Congress that would help us reach more consensus in the legislative body, as opposed to just having back and forth between these two very polarized parties.
Pocasangre noted as well that more political instability could hurt the United States' credibility as well as its economic standing. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Nigerian President Bola Ahmed Tinubu's government has proposed a temporary wage hike for federal workers and more cheap gas-powered public transport, among other measures, to offset the impact of his economic reforms and convince labor unions to call off a planned national strike. Speaking in a broadcast yesterday to mark Nigeria's 63rd Independence Day anniversary, Tinubu's announcement came after he ended a long-standing fuel subsidy that cost the government billions of dollars a year to keep fuel cheap. He also liberalized the Naira currency. The French news agency AFP reports that government officials say the reforms were needed to revive Africa's largest economy, and investors applauded them. Nigerians, however, are struggling with tripled fuel prices, a sharp Naira devaluation, and 25% inflation. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.